We gained faith. We gained faith in Krishna's protection. We must have faith in Krishna's protection, otherwise how will we serve Him? What else happened this morning? Yes?
Everyone is not doing the same mode.
There are different destinations and they are attained by different paths and different methods of worship. Yes. Akinchana? The quality of a devotee? So we have to qualify ourselves to get that kind of reciprocation from Krishna. Yeah, okay. Yes?
We saw how we can see Krishna in behind everything.
Okay, yeah. We need to learn to see Him through all the different manifestations. What are all these? The mother, the father? They're all parts and parcel of Krishna. Who is the part and parcel of Krishna? The living entity. And what about the father and mother in front of me? They are part of what? Which Krishna? They are part of which Krishna? Are there two Krishnas? Now Rukmini sounds confused.
Same Krishna that I'm part of.
The living entity or the soul is part and parcel of Krishna. Very good. And the father and mother, that refers to the person in front of us, which is an external manifestation. And that external manifestation belongs to which Krishna?
Super soul?
Material nature? It's part of the universal form. So many manifestations of the universal form. So we have to see this way or that way. All the living entities are attached to Krishna as parts and parcels. Their bodies are part of the universal form. So we can't miss it. It's all Krishna everywhere. It's all parts of Him. It's all parts of Him, parts and parcels of Him. So we should see Him everywhere and not make the mistake to do what? To see them as Krishna. Yes. They are not exactly Krishna. But if we can see Krishna behind how they are, you know, a partial manifestation of Krishna, then we'll be peaceful. Yes? Krishna condemned the saying that every path leads to the same destination. Yes. It's not the same. What else?
In the beginning we discussed Krishna speaks about the other worshippers.
Other worshippers, yes.
One is
Okay. So all these people, we heard they are somewhat some kind of worshippers of Krishna. But they don't worship it directly. That was one of the points. They don't, as opposed to the Chaturvidya, Bhajante Mam, the four kind of Sukritina, that they come to Krishna directly, but these ones don't come directly, very indirectly. They go to the devatas, seeing them as separate from Krishna, completely separate from Krishna, and seeing themselves as separate from Krishna, independent. They go to the impersonal understanding, thinking themselves to be the Brahman, or they worship the universal form. Yes. Anything else? The three Vedis, yes. Who are the three Vedis? The Brahmanas? They study the three Vedas, they became proficient in Triyavidya. Yes. What's the problem with them? They miss the essence. Who said? They miss the purport? After cooking nicely, they forget to eat. That's a good analogy. After cooking nicely, they forget to eat. Forget the purpose of cooking. So, yes. So usually these are the worshippers of the demigods. They are simply interested in gaining higher and higher types of enjoyment. And what is their destination? What is the destination of the three Vedis? Come back from where? From heaven. They go to the heaven. Ferris wheel, yes. They go to the higher planets and they come back. Sometimes, Prabhupada said, not as a routine. They go up and down. Because we said many times, you remember, this is something to do with the relativity of time, which we studied before. That from our point of view, there is a lot of time and, you know, next life, previous life, so much time, youth, middle age, old age. But from the point of view of Lord Brahma, everything is just going very fast. So it's a routine. They go up, come down, go up, come down, go up, come down, so many times in one creation, if they get stuck with this kind of worship. Yes. Anything more?
Krishna said that I am the only enjoyer and the master of all sacrifices.
I am the only enjoyer and the master, the Prabhu. I am the Bhokta and I am the Prabhu. So one should understand that and follow that. Yes, the whole chapter section here is about this contrast. Few verses about this one, few verses about that one, to bring the contrast alive to us. You know, such a different destination and such a different rapport with Krishna. So different. Our duty is to preach, yes. Today we got our duty fixed. Our duty is to preach, because otherwise they will remain in that ignorance and they will not know. So we have to specialize. One will preach to the impersonalist, one will preach to the three Vedis. We will send Raghunath Anuga to preach to the three Vedis. We have to go and preach. We'll go and preach to the demigod worshippers. Yes. Yes? Trivedis, those who are followers of the Vedas, particularly Rig, Yajur, and Sama. Yes. Why three? Because these three are the essential Vedas with all the mantras and the proceedings for the yagyas and so on, the chants. And the Atharva Veda is slightly different in nature. It is a... There is also Ayurveda in Atharva Veda, but there's not only this. In the Atharva Veda, there are many mantras and procedures, like to purify the place before the sacrifice, to purify things, to keep away evil spirits, to keep away inauspiciousness, like that. So it's things which are additional. It's not like the essence of the yagyas. It's additional things. And you say Ayurveda is also in the Atharva Veda? Nice. So these kind of things. Ayurveda in general is considered what they call it, Upaveda. It's considered Upaveda, Ayurveda. Because, it's not a science typically to attain Krishna. It's science is to remain in this world, to live in this world. Ayurveda and what is that? The Gandharva Veda, to learn how to sing like a Gandharva. The Artha Veda. Yes? Are they all in the Atharva Veda? No.
Singing is from Sama Veda.
The singing is from the Sama Veda. But they are derived. They are not completely, they are not part of the Samhitas. They are derived from that. They are called Upavedas. Yes. Yes, Rukmini?
In verse number, Krishna is saying that he carries what we have done and give what you trust him. I was thinking that he's saying that those that exclusively devote, and they were probably defining that person who can't live without being a second spiritual conscious. So, what about those that are not exclusively devoted? How do we trust Krishna?
Ye yatamam prapadyante tam stateva bhajami aham. In proportion to our surrender, he will reciprocate. In proportion. So if you are 100%, so he's yours, sold out. He becomes the devotee of his devotee. And if you are 20%, then he will also be 20%. Maybe 21, because he's very good. But there is all benefit. Because even if we get 1% of Krishna's reciprocation, we are quite well off. We're doing good. Seeing his power, his size, and everything. So, Prabhupada told us, whatever be the status, just surrender to Krishna. That's the best. Yeah. And also the point is you give 20% to him and he will work in such a way that the 80% come. You see? Vaham yaham. He will bring the other 80%. He will make sure you get them. It's a very beautiful relationship. A relationship with Krishna. What else could it be? It's very nice. Okay? Are we ready for the next? Yes? So, we had reached verse 26. Patram pushpam phalam toyam yo me bhaktya prayachati tadaham bhaktyupahritam asnami prayatatmanaha. So this is a very important verse. So here, after hearing all these things, Krishna gives us this confidential verse, and actually the whole ending part of this ninth chapter has many confidential instructions. So here we understand how to be accepted by Krishna. He's giving us the methods. Prabhupada said, for the intelligent person. So maybe some jnanis will say that this is for the unintelligent. You know, you give a little flower, leaf and this, because you are illiterate and you can't read the Upanishads. So this is what you do. This is for the simple-minded. But Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness is simple for the simple and very complicated for those who are complicated, because they will try to squeeze out some meaning from this. Prabhupada said the impersonalistic jnanis, when they come to this verse, they become extremely puzzled. They try to analyze, okay, patram, this is actually, what do we say? They do the grammatical analysis of the verse. This is an object, pushpam is also an object, phalam is an object, toyam is an object, bhaktiya, this is an instrumental, prayachat is a verb, what else? And then there is this thing here, asnami. Asnami. How can the Brahman eat? So they will become very puzzled with this. This is a confidential instruction for the devotees. It doesn't apply to the others, because they can't get to that platform of understanding. How is Krishna going to eat, especially flour? Maybe, what do you say, the banana flour, a sabji? The pumpkin flour, pakora? Pumpkin flour, pakora? Yes, this is a recipe, okay. I will accept. So Prabhupada said, Prabhupada translates this asnami by, I will accept. I will accept it. So we left this verse saying that this verse, after hearing all these things, how Krishna is so great, so inconceivable, and here he is telling us of the method to please him, which seems so insignificant. You just have to give him a little something, you know. So, but actually it's almost feels like it's this, you know, I'm inconceivable, I'm so great, but it takes nothing to please me. So this verse is here. Why is it this? You just give me something just to call for his reciprocation. He is Bhakta Vatsala. We saw that in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. He is Bhakta Vatsala. He loves his devotees. And as soon as someone does just a little something for him, then immediately he comes forward. And as he comes forward, then the devotee experiences the exchange with Krishna and then gets hooked up to this relationship. So let us try it. Srila Prabhupada says in this regard, one must simply take advantage of this bhakti process. So offer me a leaf, a flower, a fruit or water, I will accept it. But the essential ingredient in all this is bhaktiya. And to make sure that we understand that Krishna is actually of no need of water, he's not exactly thirsty, and he doesn't want just one fruit, he doesn't need anything actually, he doesn't need. But what is exactly the main ingredient of this offering? It is bhaktiya. It is love and devotion. So what Krishna is, what he wants, is requesting, is giving his order. And what he wants is an exchange of love and affection. This is the realm of devotional service. And therefore he repeats this ingredient twice. Bhaktiya, we should offer with devotion, and bhakti paritam, it is received. So it is offered with devotion. So the idea is that Rupa Goswami has explained us that in the Nectar of Instruction, that to develop a loving relationship with someone, you have to do this. What do? Dadati, pratigrinati, guhyam, akhyati, prichati, bhunte, bhojayate, cheva. So if we do this, one gives, what are we going to give him? A flower, a gift. One gives something. So in giving, first of all, there is a pleasure in giving. And there is a selflessness in giving. And there is a lot in giving. When we have to give, it means that we have to think of the other person, what the other person likes. In the Nectar of Devotion, it says we should give a favorite article to Krishna or to the devotees, which can mean something that I like very much and it's difficult to give it, or something that the other person likes very much. So there is the idea of giving here, which is a part of love. We give. We don't take. We give for the pleasure of the other person. And the idea is that we also receive. But here here Krishna just talks of our part. We should give him. And bhunte bhojayate, we should feed Krishna, most importantly. That's why here he wants a fruit. He wants some water. Some water can also be to bathe him. This verse, we said, refers to the process of archana. We offer him a water, a fruit to eat. We offer him some water, or we bathe him with some water. We offer him a leaf, which is usually taken to be tulsi. So he will accept that. And out of all these loving exchanges, Krishna himself has started here. In saying these words, which loving exchange is Krishna starting up with? He will accept, yeah, he promises to accept. He's revealing his mind. This is guhyam akhyati prichati. He's starting himself. He's revealing what he wants. He's revealing what he wants from us. And he wants nothing material. Prabhupada explains that no one can induce Krishna to accept anything. If the bhakti is there, then Krishna will jump on it literally. But if the bhakti is not there, then Krishna is not going to accept. So the process of achieving such a marvelous result is very easy. The marvelous result is that we go back to Godhead and we are completely free from all material misery. And the only thing that Krishna wants is genuine love. Very rarely found in this world, because always mixed with something. But he doesn't want that. He wants genuine love, and the Lord will be pleased to accept it. So Prabhupada explains that this is such a simple process that anyone can take to it. No one therefore can be barred from Krishna consciousness because it is so easy and universal. Anywhere in the world anybody can find these items. Who is such a fool that he does not want to be Krishna conscious by this simple method and thus attain the highest perfectional life of eternity, knowledge and bliss? Krishna wants only loving service and nothing else. Krishna accepts even a little flower from his pure devotee. He does not want any kind of offering from a non-devotee. He is not in need of anything from anyone because he is self-sufficient, and yet he accepts the offering of his devotee in an exchange of love and affection. So this is the thing that Krishna is asking from us here. Prabhupada comments on this in a verse with reference to the visit of Sudama Brahmana to Krishna in Dwarka. Because Sudama Brahmana, what did he bring? Cheap rice, old one, in a little piece of cloth. He was so embarrassed, he didn't even want to give it. But that's the only thing he had. So there Prabhupada says, the use of the words bhaktya prayachati and bhaktya uparitam, bhakti uparitam, may seem redundant since they both mean offered with devotion. But bhaktya can indicate how the Lord reciprocates the devotional mood of whoever offers him something with love. In other words, Lord Krishna here declares that his reciprocation in a pure loving exchange is not dependent on the external quality of what is offered. So, it is not after something, the external aspect of the offering, that doesn't make any difference for Krishna. It can be something wonderful offered on a golden plate, or it can be some chipped rice or some little water. He doesn't see that. What he sees is the mood. Something may or may not be impressive and pleasing in its own right, meaning it may not be something tasty or beautiful. But when my devotee offers it to me in devotion with the expectation that I will enjoy it, it gives me great pleasure. In this regard, I make no discrimination. So there should be the intention. So this idea of always thinking of Krishna, working of Krishna, it should be always filled with a favorable attitude. You'll study that in the Nectar of Devotion. That there should be that favorable attitude, not like Kamsa. We should want to please Krishna, want to please him. And as far as possible, we should know what he likes. But the essence of what he likes is just affection. So, this verse also stands as sort of stress that bhakti is the only way to achieve Krishna. It's one of those verses in the Bhagavad Gita that stress this point, that there is no other way to approach Krishna but bhakti. That's why he is repeating this twice. Prabhupada writes this: without the basic principle of bhakti, nothing can induce the Lord to agree to accept anything from anyone. Besides that, Krishna says asnami. I will accept it. Another meaning of asnami is also to eat. So this is also a revelation of the fact that God eats. For those who can accept that. And we know that he eats, and he eats if the devotion is there. We saw that in the house of Duryodhan, he didn't eat. It was offered to him. Patram, pushpam, phalam, turyam, big plate. But he got up and he left and he didn't take anything. And then after that he went to the house of Vidura, and there some harada, they didn't expect him. They were surprised, caught by surprise, so nothing was cooked. They didn't have any preparations, cooked preparations for him. And he just sat there and Vidura was speaking with him and he was in ecstasy to look at his beautiful face. And his wife thought, I must feed him. I must feed him. So she brought some bananas that she found. They had a stock in the kitchen. She brought the bananas and she started peeling the bananas. Right? And she was so much in ecstasy that what she did? She threw away the banana and she handed over the peel to Vidura to serve Krishna. And Vidura was so much absorbed in his meditation that he accepted the peels and he gave them to Krishna. And their offering, they were so much absorbed in love of Krishna that Krishna took the peels and he ate them. He ate the peels. Did you try sometimes eating the peels of the banana? You have to be very hungry. So, Krishna appreciates. So, he tastes the devotion that is in the offering. That's what he tastes. He doesn't taste the other part of it. Because he is not from this world. He has nothing to do with matter. You know. In what way does Krishna actually accept all these offerings? In what way does he eat the offerings? In what way does he accept the offerings? Prabhupada explains this. How does he accept the offerings actually? By seeing, so okay, one thing is Krishna is glancing at the offering which are placed in front of me, and by glancing, he actually takes the offering, he accepts the offering, he blesses, yes? By hearing, yes. By hearing, what does he hear? Ding, 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 ding. That's one thing he hears. What else he hears? The words of love. Okay, he hears the bell, ding ding. He hears the mantra. So when he hears the bell, he gets attracted a little. Then he hears the mantra, so he's also like curious. And only on top of these two, when there is some loving words, then he sits down. And he actually accepts. We should remember that when we do the offerings. It's not just the bell. I've seen sometimes go to some devotee's house, they prepare something quickly, they go to the altar, they put it there, they ding, 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 close the curtain, go away, and continue cooking. And then after some time, they come back, ding, 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 open the thing, prasadam. So it depends. Maybe they were thinking while in the kitchen that Krishna is eating. But we have to make sure that all the ingredients are there. It's not just the bell. It's not just all the mantras. Make sure you give all the mantras, you know, or you cut short if you don't have time. But the main thing is that there should be this thing here, that there is a loving offering. Prabhupada explains this very nicely. So, what else? By hearing, What else does Prabhupada explain about this hearing process? He accepts our intention because he is Bhavagrahi Janardhan. But what else about this hearing process, Prabhupada explains? How can he eat by hearing? Yes, because of his spiritual body, in which all the senses can perform the work of other senses. This is very, very beautiful. And, of course, the impersonalist cannot understand this. They get bewildered. Prabhupada explains, the impersonalist philosophers who wish to maintain that the Absolute is without senses cannot comprehend this verse of Bhagavad Gita. To them, it is either a metaphor. What is a metaphor?
Presenting something else with this.
Like an analogy type of. Or a proof of the mundane character of Krishna, the speaker of Bhagavad Gita. He said, feed me right now, Arjuna, where are the bananas? They think he's a material person, that's why he says, feed me. They don't understand the transcendental nature. But in actuality, Krishna, the Supreme Godhead, has senses. So it proves here, this is a verse that also proves the personality of Godhead. He has senses. We can exchange things with him, and he can eat, he can see, he can hear. And it is stated that his senses are interchangeable. In other words, one sense can perform the function of any other. That is what is meant to say, that Krishna is absolute. Lacking senses, he could hardly be considered full in all opulences. This is the argument that Prabhupada gives in Ishopanishad. If he had no form, he would be inferior to his creation. He has to have a form, because we have a form. So he has a form and many other things too. In the seventh chapter, Krishna has explained that he impregnates the living entities into material nature. This is done by his looking upon material nature. And so in this instance, Krishna's hearing the devotee's words of love in offering foodstuffs is wholly identical with his eating and actually tasting. This point should be emphasized. Because of his absolute position, his hearing is wholly identical with his eating and tasting. Only the devotee who accepts Krishna as he describes himself, without interpretation, can understand that the Supreme Absolute Truth can eat food and enjoy it. So this is generally the way that Krishna accepts the offerings. He perceives the loving intention of the devotee, and he accepts the offering. He glances at the offering, and thus he tastes it. He hears, he glances, and tastes the food. But there are also examples in which Krishna actually ate the food. That also happens. Prabhupada told us the story of, what was his name? Raghunandan, you know, the story of Raghunandan. He was a little child. His father was worshipping Krishna at home every day. And the mother was cooking, the father was doing the offering. And then one time the father had to go somewhere and gave orders before leaving, that Raghunandan, who was then a small child, said, now he's big enough so he can do the offering. So he told his wife to cook, and he instructed Raghunandan that you have to, whatever mother cooks, you have to offer to Krishna. make sure that he eats before you eat. So Raghunandan got ready, and he brought the plate, and he rang the bell very nicely. He chanted the mantras his father had taught him, and then his father had not told him that you close the curtains, you go away, you let Krishna eat alone. So he didn't know that. So he just waited there. He waited and waited and waited and waited and said, but you are not eating? So he saw that the food is still on the plate. So he became very intense in his childish understanding, but very sincere. He became very worried that my father told me that we can't eat until you eat. And he became so serious about the matter that he begged and begged and demanded, he requested, he lamented, he cried. And it's so much that my father will not be happy with me, my father will be displeased with me. I have to follow his order, you have to eat. Why don't you want to eat? You eat every day from my father and you don't want to eat from me? So he got into a whole emotional exchange with the deity. And then what happens is that Krishna actually extended his hand and ate. He ate the food. Then the boy was very satisfied. So he took the plate and went back to his mother. And he said, all right, we can eat now. Krishna has eaten. The mother saw the plate and said, where is the prasadam? And the boy said, Krishna ate. So she didn't take it so easy. She actually told him, you're a rascal. You know, you don't know that first the Mahaprasadam must first go to your father and then only you can take. Well, you ate the plate, you ate everything. She thought that he has eaten, that you have eaten all this. You did not leave anything, you have eaten before your father. How is this possible? So she locked him up in a room in the dark. And when the father returned, you know, He asked, so where is the prasadam? And she said, there is no prasadam. I mean, there is enough to eat, but there is no mahaprasadam. He said, why? Why no mahaprasadam? And she explained that, well, your son, you know, in between husband and wife, when he does well, he's my son, and when he does bad, he's your son. So she said, your son. He stuffed all the Mahaprasadam even before coming back to the kitchen. There was nothing left. But the father was very surprised that my son is so nice, he's such a nice boy. So he went to see him and talk to him. The boy was, he was crying, but he was not crying. He was so happy. He was in ecstasy. He was in complete ecstasy. Imagine, Krishna had manifested before him. He was like in complete transformed state. So the father found him in ecstasy. And he understood that, what have you done? What has happened? Tell me what happened. Then the boy innocently explained that I took the plate there and I put it in front of Krishna and he was not eating. So I told him that you wouldn't be happy. And you wouldn't be happy and he had to accept. So he accepted, so he ate. So the father was a little puzzled. So he told his wife, you cook again. And what we will do? We will do what? We will offer again. And who will offer? Raghunandan will offer. So they sent the boy again with the plate and the father said, make sure he eats. Make sure he eats. So the boy went inside the temple and the father hid behind a curtain and he was watching and watching and watching and he saw his son was crying and begging and saying, you know, why you don't eat again? This morning you ate. You took everything. And my mother said I was a thief. But he said, but my father said that I was not a thief. So he said, now you have to eat again. So he was insisting, and then the miracle happened again, that the Lord manifested and ate the offering. So after that, the father, you know, the people used to laugh. When they would see them, actually, not the people would laugh, when they would see them, they would say, oh, father and son. And the father would say, no, he's the father, I am the son. Because the child was so much more advanced, and he had managed to get the full reciprocation of Krishna. So this is how Krishna eats. He eats our devotion, he accepts our devotion. He eats because even though he is in his own realm, he is aware of everything that happens anywhere in the creation, because he is all pervading through his energies and his presence, his super consciousness. He is everywhere at any time. So he accepts the offerings. Always awake. Although we say we should not offer things in the night, but on the other side of the planet, when it's day here, it's night there, and they are doing offerings. So Krishna eats all the time, day, night, anytime. So from his abode, he can perceive what's happening here. And through his transcendental senses, he can accept anything at any distance, just by glancing, by hearing, and so on. And he also accepts, sometimes in a miraculous way, that he manifests himself and he takes away the offering. So this is Krishna. And this is the kind of yajna that he wants from us. This is his order. He orders. So we should offer everything to Krishna, and particularly we should feed him and offering food. Number one, because we love him, so we want to give him something. And number two, because he requested it. This will also serve as an appreciation. Like the people, it's a yajna. And like the people who do yajna, it's like an appreciation of the fact that he is the one who has given the food. He has given everything. So we give it to him in return. It will also serve to purify us, because there is one thing we are very attached to, at least most people, and that is eating. Everyone, more or less. That depends, there are different natures. But most of the people are very attached to food. And to give away one's own food, that's a good sign of love, right? If you get a big piece of cake, maha cake, and you meet a friend and you are thinking already, wow, I'm going to eat it at home. Slurp, slurp. And then on the way you meet a friend, but you love your friend more than you love yourself, then you will give it away. But if it's not a friend, you're not going to give it. So Prabhupada says that our duty is to find out what Krishna wants from us. And Prabhupada also says that this verse is also a proof that Krishna wants offerings in goodness. He doesn't want meat, fish, eggs. Otherwise he could have said it here. You know, give me a little cow's flesh, give me a little fishy thing, give me a little... So he didn't say that. He strictly mentioned vegetarian things. So we take it as a praman, as a proof that Krishna wants offerings in goodness. He wants offerings which are vegetarian. So that's good. And is it enough to just, Prabhupada says, when does the offering begin? And when does it end? Is the offering of the food, or the offering of arti, or the offering of abhishek, or anything we want to offer to Krishna, is it just at the moment of the offering? Just when we ring the bell, at that time there should be a lot of bhakti?
Starts
when we purchased, yeah, when we make the list. Little for me, little for Krishna, there are two lists. The toothpaste is for me. So there should be a continuous meditation of a continuous, constant cultivation of this thinking about Krishna and acting favorably to Him and thinking on Him. So we make the list, we go for shopping. While we are shopping, we should choose the best. And in choosing the best, we shouldn't think, I will enjoy it. The mind should be fixed on Krishna, that this is the most beautiful apple, and this is the most this, the most that. So, and then after this, Prabhupada said the preparation. While we are cooking, we should be thinking of Krishna. We should be remembering that he wants to eat this, he wants to eat that. We can meditate on his pastimes. We have to be very attentive, make sure that everything is perfect for Krishna. This is the way Prabhupada instructed not only deity seva, but all the services in Krishna consciousness, is that everything should be done very perfectly, very exactly. Do not forget who you are serving. It's not just anybody. It has to be super clean. It has to be very well prepared. It has to be of high class, and because it's for Krishna. And then there is the offering. First there is serving, means there is setting the plate for Krishna. Prabhupada explained, when we set the plate for Krishna, it should be done with love and devotion. The plate should be clean, everything should look nice, it should not pour all over, it should not be all mixed up. There should be some flour in the middle. So all these things, we should be precise, how many chapatis, how many pakoras, how many sweets, how many this, how many that. Everything is prepared with great attention, thinking that this plate is going to reach Krishna, or rather he will come and take. And Krishna means Radharani will be there also. So I have to make sure there are two pieces of this, two pieces of that, it's that, it's that. I think about that actually Krishna will come as a person. And then there is the offering. So again, we chant, we call the Lord, we request Him to come, to sit, to accept the prasadam. We may even explain Him what is what. I have prepared this, I have prepared that, I have done this, I have done that. And there is this was donated by this person, and I'm offering it to you now. This is the meditation of the devotee, which makes the difference between, those who are in, who don't have that Krishna consciousness, who just blubbed everything there, ring the bell, and close the curtain, go away, So, no, there has to be all this thinking. And the more one advances in devotional service, the more one gets the feeling that yes, yes, he is here. He is actually accepting the offering. He is here. And I hope I did not forget the salt like today. I hope I did not forget the salt. I hope I did not, because it is Krishna. So there has to be this constant preparation, to the constant prayer and constant meditation. So it is said that such offering is just like the offering of Ganga water to Ganga, because Krishna is everything. So it's not, you know, it's not that we have something very valuable. I got you a silver plate and I got you a silver spoon and the most expensive imported fruit on the market, and it's nothing to Krishna. It's that little drop of Ganga. It's Ganga that you offer to Ganga. Ganga is pleased being worshipped in this way. So Prabhupada also sometimes referred that it's like a child who gives a gift to his father. The father gives money to the child, little some money, just for him to buy a candy or do something. And instead of buying the candy, the child keeps the money. Or sometimes it is the father's birthday, so the kid knows, so he asks him, "I want more." So the father gives some more and doesn't know, what are you going to do with all this money? No, no, I need it. And the next day he comes and he has purchased the gift. So the father knows very well, "I purchased it with my money." But still, he's very happy. So this is Krishna. There is nothing valuable that we can give him. It's all his already. Nothing that he doesn't have. But this exchange of not taking for myself, but actually giving it to him, this is what he wants. That's all. So this is very simple, but at the same time, not everyone is blessed to be able to do such thing. And there is something more. Where is it? Here. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, "The verb ashnami, I eat, implies that Lord Krishna eats even a flower, which is supposed to be smelled, bewildered as he is by the ecstatic love he feels for his devotee." This is what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is always expert in finding some rasa. So he says, as the devotee in love offers the food, he puts a flower in the middle, and the Lord is so bewildered, is so, he feels ecstasy when he sees his devotee. So instead of taking the sabji, he eats the flower. Someone might then question the Lord, "So, will you refuse an offering made to you by a devotee of some other deity?" The Lord answers, "Yes, I will refuse to eat it." This the Lord states by the phrase prayatatmanaha, implying, only by devotional service to me can one become pure in heart. So Krishna says, asnami prayata atmanaha. Prayata atmanaha, from one in pure consciousness. So if we have something else in mind, or if Krishna is not the focus of our worship, then forget about it. He's not going to accept. Then he continues, the glories of serving him. Yat karoshi yad ashnasi, yad juhoshi tadasya, yat tapasya sikanteya, tat kurushva madarpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me. So there are two ways to see this shloka. Srila Prabhupada, of course, he sees this shloka from the point of view of bhakti and from the point of view of yukta viragya. That whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you think, whatever you feel, everything connected with me. So this is yukta viragya. Dovetailing everything in Krishna consciousness. It's not just offering him a little food once a day. No, everything we do. Prabhupada says it is the duty of everyone to mold his life in such a way that he will not forget Krishna in any circumstance. So everything we try to connect with Krishna somehow or other. If we work, we have to work, we have to maintain oneself. So Prabhupada says, work for Krishna. Somehow find a way. Work for Krishna. If you need, everyone needs some maintenance. So you should draw your maintenance from working for Krishna. Find a way. If you like to eat, you have to live. You have to eat to live. Then eat prasada. You offer it to Krishna. You cook for him. To eat, you have to cook. So for whom you will cook? You cook for Krishna. And then you take the prasada. Very good. Now, if there is any rituals, you have to perform some religious ritualistic ceremonies. So what Krishna says, do it for me. This is called archana. So if you like to do rituals, you know, you like to ring bells and you like to do pujas and all this, don't do this devata puja. Worship me. You ring the bell for me. Be suchi for me. Everything you do is for me. And then you like to give, you want to give? Give it to me. Krishna says, if you want to give, give it to me. Exactly to whom you should give? For furthering the Krishna consciousness movement. Give to the preaching mission if you have to give. Yeah. Or, oh, you are not the kind who gives. Oh, you're a Baba. You're an austere person, an ascetic. You want to do meditation? Meditate on me. How? How, Prabhu? How? Chant Hare Krishna, Prabhupada says. You like, this is actually one of the rare places where Prabhupada gives us the permission to chant 24 hours a day. He says, nowadays people are very much inclined to meditational process, which is not practical in this age. But if anyone practices meditating on Krishna 24 hours a day by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra round his beads, he is surely the greatest meditator and the greatest yogi. So this is the what Krishna says. Anything, just connect it to me. Do it for me. Whatever. Otherwise, this verse is sometimes also seen to refer to karma yoga in the sense, because in the end he said, madarpanam, arpan, arpan. You offering them to me. Okay, it's already done. Oh, you have done your work. Give me the result. Oh, you have already cooked the halwa. Okay, give it to me. Oh, you have already done this. Give it to me. So it can happen two ways, but the idea is give it to Krishna, connect it with Krishna. Either with love and devotion, you do everything consciously for Krishna, or you do your things and afterwards you offer them to Krishna. In any of these two ways, you can serve Krishna, but in any case, do it for Him. Give it to Him. And what will be the outcome of this, such an activity we have heard before, it is akarma. It doesn't generate reactions to act for Krishna. So here he says in 28, Shubha Shubha Phale Revam Moksha Se Karma Bandhanaihi Sanyasa Yoga Yuktatma Vimukto Mamupeshyasi. So three different things are happening here. Shubha Shubha Phale Revam Moksha Se Karma Bandhanaihi. In this way, you will be free from bondage to work and its auspicious and inauspicious results. So this is interesting here. You will be free from bondage. There will be no material reactions to your work. And this is, here he's being very frank. You know, it's not like in the verse where he says, just surrender unto me, I will deliver you of all your sinful reactions. But here, he is even more open, because this is the most confidential here a chapter, and he's talking to devotees here. To the non-devotees, he may tell them, I will free you from all your sins. But to the devotees, in a very intimate way, here he says, I will free you from your punya also. I will take everything away. You will have no bondage. You will not take birth again. Even not in a good family. Nothing. It will not be there. No auspicious, no inauspicious result. It's completely akarma. And then, with your mind fixed on me in this principle of renunciation, sannyasa yoga yukta atma, you will be liberated, vimukta. You will become liberated. So this is the perfection of sannyasa yoga. We heard that sannyasa yoga, what did it mean? To give up all the fruit of one's activity, to be completely detached from the fruit of one's activities. So what is the perfection of this sannyasa yoga? Prabhupada explains, it is Krishna seva, to work strictly for the benefit of Krishna. This is the perfection. And the outcome of this, and this means to be, first of all, situated within oneself as the servant of Krishna, accepting this position of dasya. So in that way work. So we heard there will be no reaction. Now we heard there will be mukti. How there will be mukti? Because this working for Krishna is going to completely clean the mirror of the mind. So there will be liberation. And then in the end, mam upeshyasi, come to me. So you'll be free from bondage, you'll be liberated and completely purified, and number three, you will come to me. So Srila Prabhupada explains, what is this coming to me? He says, this is actually the highest liberation. There are different types of liberation that are mentioned. Prabhupada says there are five different stages of liberation. And here it is specified that the devotee who has always lived his lifetime here under the direction of the Supreme Lord, as stated, has evolved to the point where he can, after quitting this body, go back to Godhead and engage directly in the association of the Supreme Lord. So this is the achievement of the devotee. He goes to Golok Dham. He doesn't even go to Vaikuntha in this cage here, as explained by Srila Prabhupada. Salokya, Sashti, Samipya, Sarupya. He doesn't go to those places. He goes to Golok Dham. So what is to be done? One has to work, Prabhupada says, and at the same time, think of me. And what is this think of me? The other day we were talking of this think of me. Prabhupada gives us more light here. So we said, yes, it means remember him. Be filled with the transcendental sound vibration. And we also explained it means think how to serve Krishna. This is also thinking of Krishna 24 hours. When we think how to serve him, how to prepare the offerings for him, how to prepare the festivals and so on. Planning how to serve him. So a person who is engaged at this level, who doesn't do anything for himself, and who uses everything in the service of Krishna, who is in full yukta vairagya, so such person is considered to be perfect. Even if such person is not yet on the liberated platform, but his activities are liberated for sure. And because he is acting on the platform of liberation, the fruit will certainly be in the end liberation and going back to Krishna. Prabhupada explains, that usually a devotee behaves in a very proper way. But his main concern is Krishna's service. This is the essence of his life, is to just serve Krishna. So Prabhupada says, he does not give serious attention to the fruitive activities or prescribed duties mentioned in the Vedas. He heard because he knows there's no fault in giving them up if I replace them by Krishna's service. If I just serve Krishna, there is no fault in giving up these prescribed duties mentioned in the Vedas. And besides that, he doesn't even have time to perform these prescribed duties because he has dedicated all his time to Krishna. Prabhupada says, for ordinary persons, it is obligatory to execute the prescribed duties mentioned in the Vedas. But although a pure devotee who is completely engaged in the service of the Lord may sometimes appear to go against the prescribed Vedic duties, actually, it is not so. Why is it not so? So usually the devotee, as we heard many times, he will act on the platform of showing the example to others. Most of the time he will behave quite properly in society. But sometimes he will neglect some prescribed duties. Why he will neglect them? For a higher purpose. Because somehow it interferes with his devotional service. It interferes, or he didn't have time, or he had to choose. It's either here or there. I can't be in two places at once. So it may appear sometimes that he will go against the prescribed duties. But he is actually not going against, because the highest principle, the highest dharma, is to serve Krishna. It is said, therefore, by Vaishnava authorities that even the most intelligent person cannot understand the plans and activities of a pure devotee. A person who is always engaged in the service of the Lord, or is always thinking and planning how to serve the Lord, is to be considered completely liberated at present, and in the future his going back home, back to Godhead, is guaranteed. He is above all materialistic criticism, just as Krishna is above all criticism. So in that way, here you see how Krishna protects his devotee. And he's placing the devotee, he is placed in Krishna's service. So one should be very careful to see faults in that devotee just because of some material discrepancy, in his regular duties. Then Krishna continues, revealing more about himself, his mentality. What is Krishna's mind here? Samoham sarvabhuteshu name dveshyostina priyaha ye bhajam mam bhakya mayi teteshu chapyaham. I envy no one, Krishna says, nor am I partial to anyone. Samoham sarvabhuteshu, I see everyone equal. I am equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend. He is in me, and I am also a friend to me. So there, the first two lines, Krishna says, Samoham sarvabhuteshu name dveshyostina priyaha. I'm equal to everyone. I don't like anybody. And I don't hate anybody, you know. So what is so this position is the position of Krishna. This is how he deals with those who are not his devotees, who are not directly worshipping him. He deals with them mostly in the role of Paramatma, and he's just witnessing what they are doing, and he's neither, and we said he doesn't interfere. He just stands and watches and waits and is patient and gives them what they want, fulfills their desires, and he's quite neutral. But the second two lines are very very different. Ye bhajanti, those who worship me, mam, with devotion, bhaktya, oh, then it is very different. He says, mayite teshu cha pyaham. Mayite, they are in me and I am in them. What does it mean? They are in me and I am in them. Yes, in one sense, yes. They are conscious of each other. They are conscious of each other. I think Prabhupada was saying something interesting. Yes, Srila Prabhupada has explained that as we think of him, he thinks of us. Nice. And what does he think about? What are his thoughts? So Prabhupada reveals his thoughts. This is Krishna's thoughts. How can my devotee come quick back to me? This is what he's thinking. But we are planning to go back to Krishna, but sometimes we misplan, we plan something else. But as we are planning to go back to Krishna, on his side, Krishna is also planning how we can come back quicker. We are thinking, well, it's going to take me at least, first I have to repay my loan, and then I have to, marry my daughter, my brother, my son, my this, my that. And then, but Krishna on his side, he said, he's such a nice devotee. Let me figure out something so that he comes back quicker. So this is interesting here. He's impartial. Prabhupada says, just like the rain that pours everywhere. He doesn't look where the rain is pouring. So Krishna is the same. He offers opportunity for devotional service to everybody. They take it, they don't take it, it's up to them. But if they take it, then he immediately shows interest. Just as a parent will show more interest in his children than in the children of others. Even though he will maybe be very protective and very careful with other people's children, but it's not at all the same as with his own children. It's his own flesh, it's his own self, it's his own life. So that's very different. So Krishna maintains everyone, but with his own children, it is different. He's possessive. And he wants their good. And that's why sometimes, even though that the relationship between the two is not under karma, he can change everything. So Prabhupada says, the Lord claims that every living entity in whatever form is his son. And so he provides everyone with a generous supply of the necessities of life. He is just like a cloud which pours rain all over, regardless of whether it falls on rock or land or water. But that's not the only thing. For his devotee, he gives special attention. Such devotees are mentioned here. They are always in Krishna consciousness. They are transcendentally situated in Krishna. The Lord says here distinctly, Mayite, they are in me. Naturally, as a result, the Lord is also in them. This is reciprocal. This also explains the words, Ye yatha mam prapadyante tams tatheva bhajamyaham. Whosoever surrenders unto me proportionately, I take care of him. So this is the whole reciprocation between the devotee and the Lord. And why this exists, Prabhupada says, is because this is the reciprocation between two conscious entities. They are conscious of each other. They perceive what is in each other's mind. the Krishna understands that the devotee is wanting to reach him. And whenever somehow Krishna reciprocates, the devotee understands that this is personal reciprocation from Krishna. So he takes it. So they pull each other. They pull each other along the line of increasing this relationship. Now Srila Prabhupada gives a beautiful example of the diamond set in a golden ring. What does that mean? They complement each other. It's very gentle. They complement each other. So, which one is the golden ring?
Lord is the diamond and devotee is
the Yeah. So, the Lord becomes situated on the devotee. It's interesting. He is the decoration on the diamond ring. The Lord is the decoration on the devotee. When a diamond is set in a golden ring, it looks very nice. The gold is glorified and at the same time the diamond is glorified. So they go together, they are meant to go together. The whole concept is that they should be together. If you can have the ring, the golden ring without diamond, or you can have a diamond without the golden ring, both of them are very valuable, but when you put them together, then you get the best combination. The Lord and the living entity eternally glitter, meaning they are effulgent. They are self-effulgent. Both of them are beautiful, effulgent. And when a living entity becomes inclined to the service of the Supreme Lord, he looks like gold. We talked the other day of the gold that has been... Did I talk of this here? No, that was on the Radhastami day. Gorangi, Radharani, she has a golden complexion. So it is said that when gold is put in the fire, it glitters. Becomes shiny, and it is removed from all the impurities. It becomes shiny, very very effulgent. And if that gold has been burned, put in fire 1,000 times, how pure it will be and how effulgent it will be. That is the effulgence of Radharani. So here similarly, that when a devotee becomes inclined to the service of the Lord, he becomes so purified, so beautiful, he glitters like gold. And the Lord is a diamond, and so this combination is very nice. The Supreme Lord becomes the devotee of his devotee. If a reciprocal relationship is not present between the devotee and the Lord, then there is no personalist philosophy. The Lord's reciprocation should not be considered to be under the law of karma. It belongs to the transcendental situation in which the Lord and his devotees function. So, in other words, this devotion brings in our life things which were unexpected according to our karma. According to our karma, we were meant to get different things, good, bad, this, that, but Krishna is not part of that. The bhakti, that's not this kind of plan. And when we start this relationship with the Lord, then he will bring into our life things which are unexpected. He will change. Sometimes he will change our karma. So, but we heard that before. This also means that bhakti is not the result of the karma. Bhakti is, it springs from itself. We catch it from those who have it. And then we cultivate it. And as we cultivate it, we become free from the laws of karma. And we enter a different sphere of activity. So this is very beautiful. Then Krishna is going to give us some more advantages of practicing this bhakti, and also knowledge about what is his relationship with his devotees. Once Krishna is related to somebody, to a jivatma, that person is completely protected. Api chet sudaracharo bhajate mamananya bhak sadureva samantavya samyak yavasito hisaha. Even if one, and who is this one? The devotee. Even if one commits the most abominable action, sudurachar. Usually achar means behavior. Mm-hmm. And durachar means bad behavior. And sudurachar means
very bad.
So therefore Prabhupada translates with abominable, something which is completely unacceptable by society standard, by human standards, something really out of order. If he is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly, sadhu. He's a sadhu because he is properly situated in his determination, vyavasita. So he is situated in his determination. Which determination?
To serve.
He is determined to serve. He is determined to continue serving. He understands that this is some difficulty that I'm going through and I have to go through. And while going through, I should just continue to serve Krishna by hearing, by chanting, and doing whatever is possible. So this is a very important verse in the Bhagavad Gita. And here Krishna says that even though a devotee may behave in a very abominable way, still he is considered saintly. Now if a karmi or jnani would do the same, he would go to hell several times. Because he wouldn't have Krishna's protection. But the devotee is different. And so here Krishna has... So what? In what way is... Why is the devotee going to commit something abominable? Devotee just wants to serve Krishna. So what is this abominable thing that the devotee is going to commit here? Because of the conditioning, yes. So this doesn't talk here usually of a pure devotee. A pure devotee is not going to do anything abominable. But as long as we haven't reached the status of being completely purified, then there are still many pullings inside that work on the devotees. And in the course of daily life, sometimes we happen to somehow or other fall under the conditioning. Prabhupada explains, when a living entity is conditioned, he has two kinds of activities. One is conditional and the other is constitutional. So the constitutional means shravanam, kirtanam, smaranam, padasevanam, archanam, vandanam. The devotee is engaged in this. And this is his focus in life. He's trying to engage in this as much as possible. But due to still the dehatma buddhi is there, some identification with the body is there, and the identification with the mind is there, it is still there, and the mind is not completely purified. So Prabhupada says, As for protecting the body or abiding by the rules of society and state, certainly there are different activities, even for the devotees, in connection with the conditional life, and such activities are called conditional. So there are different things we do. We have to eat, we have to sleep, we have to do so many things, we have to behave, we have to live in society, we have to live in a certain country. So there are certain ways that we are expected to behave by. And sometimes we go across. Besides these, the living entity who is fully conscious of his spiritual nature is engaged in Krishna consciousness or the devotional service of the Lord. And he has activities which are called transcendental. Such activities are performed in his constitutional position and they are technically called devotional service. So this, can you give me some other word for these two categories of activities or duties here that we studied? The Swadharma. Yes. There are two Swadharmas. Two Swadharmas. One Swadharma is the Dharma of the body, and the other Swadharma is the Dharma of the soul. And that Swadharma of the body is not just whatever we do while we are here, and the Swadharma of the soul is not whatever we're going to do when we reach Krishna, but even right now we are engaged in those two Swadharmas. The body has its own ways and the mind has their own ways, and they have to follow certain rules in society. And at the same time, we are also following devotional service. So we are walking on these two paths, and as long as the body is there, we are on these two paths. So that we go in parallel, Prabhupada says. And normally, the two things should go in parallel, but sometimes they become opposed to one another. Of course, we should be very careful that we don't. But sometimes it happens. Prabhupada says, sometimes, however, it may be seen that a person in Krishna consciousness commits some act which may be taken as most abominable socially or politically. But such a temporary fall down does not disqualify him. So what is the part that does not disqualify? So there is a fall down. The fall down is from which point of view? Socially. From the social point of view, the devotee fell down. Or from some other material point of view, the devotee fell down. Was not able to maintain a particular ashram and came down to a lower ashram, or did something which is reprehensible by society, you know, like, what could it be? Some stealing or some running away with somebody's wife or husband, you know. All these things going on. It goes on, unfortunately. And we witness that. It goes on. So this is called, what is it called in the eyes of Krishna? It's a fall down. It's a fall down from the proper course of behavior. And it's something which is meant to incur sinful reactions. It will incur sinful reactions. But does it mean that the devotee is fallen? It depends, actually. It depends. Because some people, when they fall down, like socially or whatever, they forget Krishna consciousness and they give it up. So if he gives up Krishna consciousness, then that's it. But if the person somehow or other sticks to Krishna consciousness and also not only sticks to it, but what? Understands that he has done something incorrect. Not that I can do whatever is okay because I'm a devotee, you know, and it is said you can do any damn thing, and at the same time you continue chanting your rounds and everything will be okay because Krishna will protect me. So this is not what Krishna means here. It means that the person should actually acknowledge that something has gone off track and he should repent. We should repent for it. Otherwise, so the criteria for a devotee to remain saintly in spite of fall downs on the material platform is his determination to serve the Lord. But in general it is understood that the fall down or the activities which are incorrect, either morally or socially or whatever, should not be premeditated. Not that you have to plan it. That would be an offense to the holy name, as we know, to commit sinful activities on the strength of the holy name. This is like the karmis who want to do some pap, and what do they do? They plan the whole thing. All together, they go to the priest and they say, "Hey, I want to do that. I know it's not, you know, permissible, it's not correct, but I want to do that. I want to do this papa, so tell me what prayaschit I could do afterwards." So this kind of verse doesn't condone this kind of activity, that we should sin on the strength of knowing that devotional service can burn everything. It will burn it, it will burn it. So this is not the right mentality here. This refers to someone who accidentally, and accidentally means that there is some involuntary, some pulling from within, pulling, pushing, whatever it is, and somehow you can't help it. The consciousness becomes overwhelmed and something happens, some behavior, misbehavior takes place. But afterwards, and sometimes even before, during, after, the person feels bad, but especially afterwards, we should feel very repentant that this was not the correct thing to do. And then one should remain fixed in Krishna consciousness to not to get rid of the reaction. That's not the idea. Why should one remain fixed in Krishna consciousness? To purify of? To purify of that conditioning, meaning not just to get rid of the reactions of this. That's not what the devotee is. Actually, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, he says the devotee doesn't try to get rid of the reactions. He says, "Let me suffer the reactions. But I continue in my devotional service, because I should be purified from within so that this doesn't happen again and I can become fixed in devotional service so that it doesn't happen again and again." So and so that, because he knows very well that all these things are due to all my previous karmas, and the only way to get out of all this is to serve Krishna. And plus the devotee is fixed in his determination because of his conviction. He's teared apart between these two things. There is the material nature which is dragging us down, and there is the spiritual aspiration that we have. We aspire to be a devotee. We are aspiring for something. Now this verse also, yes?
This verse is Krishna inspiring the devotees to not discontinue their devotional service.
Yes, it's a very inspiring verse in which Krishna tells us that you don't give up your devotional service. Because sometimes when there is a fall down, the devotees become demoralized, depressed. Falling to depression, and they think, well, it's not worth it, it's not working, or I am not worthy of being Krishna's devotee. I am too low. I can't be a devotee. So Krishna is encouraging that, no, this is not the thing to do. You continue, you be my devotee, you be happy. And the confidence that we get here also is that Krishna does not reject us on the basis of material fall down because of our mind. He understands us. So he doesn't, we remain. So this is what Krishna says, sadur eva sa mantavya. Krishna considers him good, actually. Sadhu means good. He considers us good, even though we have done something wrong. And not only Krishna considers, so this verse also, besides serving as an encouragement and so on, it also serves as a warning for others. That don't dare to criticize a devotee who is falling, or who has fallen. Prabhupada says, the word sadur eva, he is saintly, are very emphatic. They are a warning to the non-devotees that because of an accidental fall down, a devotee should not be derided. He should still be considered saintly, even if he has accidentally fallen down. And the word mantavya is still more emphatic. If one does not follow this rule and derides a devotee for his accidental fall down, then one is disobeying the orders of the Supreme Lord. Prabhupada gives an analogy, which is from the Shastra, it's from the Nishinga Puran, that the faults of a devotee, they are like the spots on the moon. On the moon, there are some spots. It's not all white. There are some spots. But these spots, they do not hamper the dissipation of the moonlight. So in the same way, the mistakes that a devotee commits, it does not hamper, number one, his service in Krishna consciousness at all. It does not hamper his relationship with Krishna. It does not hamper the development of his consciousness. And in some cases, it does not hamper his spiritual influence. Sometimes we see in our society that sometimes some leaders have some little problem, something happens, you know. But at the same time, the same person is still inspiring so many people and, you know, conveying the message of Krishna consciousness in a very powerful way. Which means that there are two tracks going here, which is exactly what Prabhupada explains, that due to some previous, you know, impressions of sinful nature, the person is somehow shaken, and he's not shaken, the person is being tossed a little bit within, you know, and sometimes says something which is coming from the past, which forces the person to behave in a little bit of a sinful way, or a way which is not correct, but the person doesn't lose the focus, and actually the main connection is with Krishna, and it's not with these things. And as the person progresses further and further and further, all this gets burnt. And he attains Krishna. So we have to be very careful how to. At the same time, this doesn't mean, you know, there are two things. One is how we behave internally with such a person. We should be very understanding, we should be very forgiving internally. And we should make sure not to criticize that person, especially if the person is an advanced devotee, but even others We should know that Krishna is dealing personally with his devotees. He is piloting their karma and he is burning their karma, and he knows what he is doing. He's putting the devotee through different circumstances for his own purification. Another thing that Krishna sometimes is doing is that he is using some devotees to show the example of things which are not to be done. It's another thing he does sometimes, to show us that this is not to be done. If you do this, you get that. Even if you are a great devotee, if you do this, you get that. So he's doing different things. And so on the internal platform, we have to be very careful not to become critical and talk bad about that person who is having trouble and so on. But externally, it also doesn't mean that you can just let anything happen, let it go. Sometimes some measures may have to be taken to rectify the person or to, you know, maintain order in society. We cannot just let anything go, because then those who are crooked will just take that as an example, right? So we cannot let bad examples just survive in society without any punishment. But these are two separated things: how we deal externally with the person and how we deal internally with the person. This is something very extraordinary that Krishna does here. On the other hand, Prabhupada says, one should not misunderstand that a devotee in transcendental devotional service can act in all kinds of abominable ways. This verse only refers to an accident due to the strong power of material connections. Devotional service is more or less a declaration of war against the illusory energy. So you have to understand also another thing is that the devotee has declared war to the material energy, and she's beating back. She's kicking back, you know. We are trying to purify the mind so all the bad things come up. We are trying to be peaceful so everything is disturbed. This is what is happening. And as long as one is not strong enough to fight the illusory energy, especially in the form of the mind, there may be accidental fall downs. But when one is strong enough, he is no longer subjected to such fall downs. Then the final lesson that Prabhupada gives: no one should take advantage of this verse and commit nonsense and think that he is still a devotee. So now Prabhupada is explaining how the person himself should feel. He should not just act in any nonsense way and still consider Krishna says, I am still a sadhu, please wash my feet. No, so there should be humility. When someone goes through this, so it should call for humility. As we said, the humility, not depression, but humility. Because, of course, we are still a devotee, but at the same time it means we are not a great devotee. So, it's good, because those who don't fall down, many times, they are also not great devotees, but they don't know. But when you fall down, you come to know, I'm not a great devotee. So it's actually bringing one much further in devotional service to come to this conclusion that I am not great. So if we cannot come to this conclusion by peaceful means, Krishna is going to make sure we understand. Then he says, so he's warning us against, of course, misuse of this verse, to just do any nonsense and claim to be a devotee, if he does not improve in his character by devotional service, then it is to be understood that he is not a high devotee. So the idea is that someone may go through a storm, but there will be rectification. But someone who is permanently in a storm, it has to be understood that he's not sincere enough, that Krishna is not helping him and he's not sincere enough. Of course, there are many tinges of this, because some people come to Krishna consciousness with a baggage which is so heavy that they seem to be perpetually in a storm. So we have to know the people very intimately to actually be able to judge who is sincere and who is not sincere. And in general, in doubt, abstain. So let those who are involved deal with the matter and keep respectful distance if we cannot understand fully the situation. But to get involved with criticizing devotees in difficulty, that is not very intelligent. And we should also think, what would we expect if this would happen to us? If I would fall down and have a real bad time, what would I expect others to do with me? Obviously, I would expect compassion and some help and something. So we have to keep the balance between how to deal with the person, there has to be a balance between what to do with the person and how what we do to the person is affecting the society in general, is affecting others. So it's quite a difficult matter. But as far as Krishna is concerned, if the devotee is sincerely trying to improve himself, then Krishna doesn't have any grudge, or he doesn't pull back from his relationship or anything like this. On the contrary, many times when someone goes through a hard time, it is a time when one becomes much more connected with Krishna. In Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a verse by Lord Brahma which says that while suffering the results of one's sinful activities, one should simply tolerate the difficulty. And at the same time, one should continue to serve Krishna. One should accept, one should understand that this is Atma Kritam. It is done by myself. It is the result of my sins. And now the result has come to me. One should see it like this. And simply continue very sincerely in one's devotional service, praying to Krishna for forgiveness. And Krishna says, he uses the same word, which is, this is 10:14:8. And here Krishna uses the same word here. He doesn't use the same word. Sorry. No, he doesn't use the same word here. But the idea is that if someone, takes it upon himself to become humble when there is trouble in one's life and continues in devotional service, that person will certainly achieve liberation. He will achieve liberation because he remains fixed in Krishna consciousness. And it will, as I said, it will tighten the relationship with Krishna. Because when we are in trouble, if we are sincere, we have to so much depend on Krishna. No trouble, Krishna is on the altar, it's fine, it's beautiful. Go to see him in the morning. But when we are in trouble, then Krishna is not just on the altar. Krishna is in my heart and I'm praying to him and he's always with me and I need him at every time and I remember him all the time and I, I beg him, I pray him, I worship him, I do anything. So these difficulties are actually Krishna's mercy. All right, so I think I will have to free you here. We were not able to completely finish this chapter, but we have done good progress. So tomorrow we will hear the destiny of one who has fallen down like this, how he will recover, and how Krishna, even though because of his activities, he may in his next life, in case he doesn't make it in this life, in his next life he may have to take a little sinful reactions, he may take a lower birth, but that will not stop his bhakti. He will continue to serve Krishna. So Krishna will keep his relationship. Srila Prabhupada ki. So thank you very much. Tomorrow we continue. And tomorrow we will be starting chapter 10. And we'll be studying many interesting things, including all the opulences, the vibhutis. How Krishna manifests his opulence in this world.